And are we all here?
We are now.
Yes.
Woohoo! Welcome back to the podcast.
Yes.
Thank you.
Running very late.
Yeah.
But my fine guests, Katie Rich,
Hello.
Joe Reed.
The D is silent.
Sorry. And Nick Avis.
Actually, it's Nick Javis.
Who was my alarm clock this morning?
Cares for us all.
Although somebody on the blog had the great idea that I should use my Skyped recording of Nicole Kidman saying, "Nathaniel, it's Nicole," as my alarm clock.
Oh God.
So I'm gonna figure out how to do that.
Are you telling us you haven't already done that? I don't believe that for a second. Maybe you just dream about it so much that you don't know that you're being woken up.
I have not done that as of yet, but I will admit that I've listened to that part of the recording many times.
There you have.
Nathaniel, it's Nicole.
Nicole, hi. Oh, you guys don't want to know how often I rewound Madonna saying my name at the WE junket I went to.
Oh my God.
Your WE experience was that memorable, huh?
I'm like, hi. Great moments. And yeah, it was the most memorable moment of WE for me.
Yeah. That's, I believe that.
Great moments in star that. Fucking.
Yeah, for me too, actually. I never saw WE. So this is the only reason I'll ever think about it.
Oh, WE. I can't even get into it.
I felt bad for Abby Cornish throughout.
Sure, of course.
Although, speaking of her, I just watched Seven Psychopaths.
And felt bad for her
Is
all
it any
over
good?
again.
But at least the film understood that.
That's funny.
No.
I saw Seven Psychopaths probably within the same few weeks that I saw Ruby Sparks, and I saw something else that didn't serve its female character, or like, because Ruby Sparks was about how screenwriters don't serve female characters well, and Seven Psychopaths was also like very knowing about that, and I was just like, great, this is good, we all recognize the problem, next step is actually writing a good role for a woman in a movie.
Yeah.
Now we've all admitted we have a problem. We are powerless against whatever. But, like, now next step's good. Let's move on and now actually write a good role for a woman. Specifically,
Ruby?
Abby Cornish, because she deserves it. She's really good.
Oh my God, does she ever?
Well, they have to do the making amends thing, too.
Yes, exactly.
Now that they've identified the problem.
Exactly.
Well, I think being in WE was her amends for something, I'm sure.
It's the last podcast before the fateful Oscar nominations.
Which
but
is crazy because it's still 2012 as we
it's
record.
Just it's crazy.
It's
I
so
keep
early.
saying that this is our last podcast for the nominations. I'm like, no, it's not. We have like a month.
Yeah.
We don't.
It's nuts.
Yeah, and the truncated schedule of course has caused lots of drama within the industry. And within blogging.
Yeah, the punditry? Yeah, oh my God.
They're even
if I hear one
not
more
necessarily
argument,
in that order,
if
I
hear
would
one
guess.
More argument on Twitter about fucking tech support at the Academy, like, I'm gonna flip. What the hell are we even talking about, you guys? Like, it's so crazy. Like,
yeah, so I've been gone for a week and I totally missed all of this. Are old people not voting online and we're surprised by this somehow? I don't
well,
know. What,
no,
what,
the, even when they try to, apparently the system is failing them.
Oh.
And they're posting their trouble tickets on Twitter, and that's being covered as news, which is super interesting to the rest of us. But when Rise of the Guardians gets nominated for Best Picture, you're going to know none of the old people could vote.
The thing about it is, for all the drama, this is why it's a non-news story for me, since they never release any details of voting,
yeah.
including percentages of who voted, there's no way we would ever know what the story is.
Right.
Or even if there was a story.
But it, unless it is sort of like Nick suggested, like a conspicuously young skewing set of nominees this year.
What, like Perks of Being a Wallflower?
That
being
would be
nominated.
Crazy. Oh my God.
That would be amazing. See, now
I don't think
it's
torpedoing
totally
trouble with the curve.
Oh dear.
I'm totally ready for something bonkers to happen.
Because of the truncated schedule, I actually think it's going to be the opposite. I think it's going to be
they're going to skew more
very similar to, you know, everything we've already heard. Well, because there was no time. There was no time for any of the underdogs to really rise. You know.
Yeah.
So
much like the Guardians.
That's true.
So,
but
I want...
it's funny because like the precursors have been less lockstep.
Well, the Critics Award part, yes.
Well, yeah, it's funny because I guess Globe and SAG were really similar, just not in ways that I expected them to be. If you're talking about like Best Actress, I still don't feel like Helen Mirren, Naomi Watts, and was it Rachel Weisz who was the third?
Yeah,
Rachel Weisz.
I feel like I still don't feel like those are the three that are going to sort of, you know, sail on in, and yet that's what the precursors seem to be telling us. So maybe it's like I'm reading into my, you know, that Reva's still alive and that Wallace is still alive.
Well, they are both still alive.
Well, yes, yes. But I think
that sounded better. Like an Amour spoiler to me.
Tell the man with the money to come here and pay me.
So, since we're talking about dramas in the last minutes of voting, Anne Dowd famously announced that she was footing the own bill for her screeners to generate more votes, hopefully. And I was wondering, would you guys foot your own bill if you thought you had a chance at an Oscar nomination?
I don't know. I guess it depends on how much these... Do you have any idea how much it costs to send out screeners?
I mean, I assume it has to be substantial for it to be a story at all.
I feel like I, at the very least, would go through a front, like, get Reese Witherspoon to talk about, like, rather than, like, myself. I think I would just need, like, one layer of buffer, so it wouldn't really seem like I'm going full Melissa Leo on it.
I think I'd have to figure out what credit card account I have that Derek can't see. Because... he would like curtains, and we've needed a new couch for a while, and I think that this choice would not be popular in my household, but I can see myself making it.
You were like, honey, I got the National Board of Review Best Supporting Actress. Like, there's a chance.
Yeah.
There's a chance.
Yes.
Yeah. That's right.
I like
that. Well,
it could be the new Lupe Ontiveros, and you're standing in my way.
I like that nothing about your life would change in this world except that you are eligible for an Oscar. Like, you still need a new couch.
Yeah. Well,
well, ain't that the truth?
Anne Dowd probably does need a new couch.
People are always wondering, is it worth, you know, these people campaigning? Or not her, because obviously people think the performance is very special, but including myself. People often think when there's, you know, silly for your consideration ads that, you know, why are these things being campaigned? You know, it's just for, you know, someone's ego or whatever. But I think for the most part, it actually is smart to campaign if you have any business being in the conversation because of momentum issues. You know, like if you become someone who is part of the conversation, that makes it easier the next time, actually.
Well, that's true. And also for something like compliance, it's still about getting people to see the movie that you're in. You know what I mean? Like, it is, nobody's kidding themselves, but it's not the same as, like, whoring yourself out for this big major studio release.
Like Melissa Leo. Like, she was in a Best Picture nominee that was, and she was the front runner for her category, and she still went through
right.
all that.
Yes. So I feel like, at least with Anne Dowd, I can be like, well, you know, at the very least, if it's going to get more people to see a movie that they maybe wasn't going to be on their radar, like, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Or if you just want to die and have your obit say, Michael Lerner, Academy Award nominated actor,
yes,
has merged with the infinite today.
So
but
I
would want that.
I would too.
Well, that was ticked off the Michael Lerner box on the podcast bingo, so that's
good. Wait, there's a podcast bingo I want to play?
There actually should. I think some enterprising reader should maybe come.
But you never know which film you were going to draw from, so anything could happen.
It could just
I knew
be like
we
could start dropping Joel McRae's name or something.
Well, it'll be like Joe mentions Avatar, or you know that that would maybe be the center block.
Well, there you go. Somebody just crossed it off.
Exactly. Yeah. See,
you're cheating.
Ha ha ha.
most recent movie that we've all taken in, maybe not absorbed, Django Unchained. Nick just saw it, so
I was telling Nick and Joe that I've been out of the conversation for about a week, so I've kind of missed where everyone just decided it was a masterpiece and we can't argue about it. That seems like when every time I go on Twitter, that seems to be the case.
Oh, the silliness of Twitter.
That's true.
Speaking of not serving your female characters well.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
And he's been so good about that.
I know.
It drives me crazy.
It was especially frustrating for me since I had, you know, spoken with Kerry Washington before I saw the movie. And,
right.
I mean, not that I would have been, you know, like all...
Well, and before she saw the movie.
Yeah, not that I would have been all confrontational, like, you know, why did you have such a bad role in that movie?
Well, and I had seen the movie before a lot of that, like, week before it opens press. So I saw the movie before I saw her on, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel and a couple other places. And it was, she's selling the movie from a certain angle, and probably a different angle than, say, Jamie Foxx is going to. And so you could tell the studio was like, this movie is a romance at its heart, and sell that. So she's out on TV and just being like, at its heart, it's really just a love story about two people, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, A, no, it's not, and B, I'm so, so, so sad that you have to be out there trying to sell that.
Right.
Knowing, you know, how the movie just does not serve her character well.
Or A, yes, it is, but one of the lovers is named Christoph Waltz.
Well, sure.
Or...
But even that, yeah. Like, you know, all the Tarantino movies, and I've basically, at worst, very much liked every Tarantino movie that I've seen up until now. And you have all these scenes of, like, just sparkling, fascinating conversation between two people. And... that just, you saw the parts in this movie where that was supposed to go, sort of those like mountain pass fireside chats or whatever between the two of them. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't quote you one line of dialogue from it now. I feel like it was, the Tarantino expectation was there, but I feel like in the execution, it was just all really flat and uninteresting.
Hmm. See, I'm happy to chalk this all up to him having to finish it really, really fast. And there are parts of it that just feel poorly edited and, you know, not assembled. Like, even DiCaprio's performance feels like it needed more editing behind the camera to shape it together. But it sounds like you kind of think goes back to the script. Like, this just isn't a good movie at its base.
You know, undercooked on a script level, too. Just, you know, maybe fine-tuning would have helped that as well. But it just doesn't jump out at me for anything other than the violence. And I feel like, for as much as Tarantino has gained a reputation for ultraviolence, mm-hmm. It's never seemed like the reason for the movie before this.
Yeah.
Even Reservoir Dogs, I feel like the violence was punctuation, and I feel like in this, the violence is the main part of the sentence.
Hmm. That's interesting. I mean, like, I feel like the first Kill Bill and Bastards feel similarly designed to achieve their final half hour bloodbaths, mm-hmm. Which I think is part of why I think Kill Bill 2 is so interesting, because that's already happened, so you have to go somewhere else. But I did think that there was a different... I agree with you that the rest of it feels so... even just visually, there are so many static and weirdly framed shots all over this movie that you do feel it coming alive in a certain way for those, like... water balloons of gun blood squib to, like, shoot out of people, but that the movie is, like, for all his reputation as a stylist, if you freeze frame that movie once it comes out on DVD, it's really hard to find a shot that's particularly interesting or even ambitious.
So Nick, but you, if I recall, you did not like Bastards either, correct?
No, mm-hmm. I didn't.
And so, like, I enjoyed Bastards quite a lot, and I'm very mixed on Django, but I do not want him, under no circumstances, to make it a trilogy of revisionist revenge history.
Oh man, no.
Well, as I've said fairly emphatically, don't expect it to be about Stonewall or anything like that. Quentin Tarantino doesn't know gay people, in his movies ever anyway.
But so. I wouldn't want him to.
Of course I wouldn't want it. So, like, thank God. But, like, thank God he doesn't recognize the existence of homosexuals in his...
Seriously, he'll leave you alone for now.
Yeah. Like, move on to, I don't know, I guess Native Americans maybe. But, like, I don't know, not us.
Ben Koenigsberg made the point in Time Out Chicago that this is basically his Manderley. And, that we'll see if there's a third one yet again, or if you can already see his fatigue up there on screen.
I think this movie has sort of proven once and for all, I find Christoph Waltz likable, and I understand why other people like him. I will never get him as a dynamic film actor. Like, I just never am fully on board with what he's put down. It's strange, and I think it's idiosyncratic, and that's why I get why other people like it. I have just never fully connected with him.
Well, for me, I did, you know, connect with him just fine in this movie, and I thought, you know, he deserved the Oscar for Bastards, but I just felt like it was the same performance again.
Yeah.
Essentially, only without the core being...
Hans Landa is a much more interesting character when it comes down to it. There, I mean, there's like Schultz is an interesting guy, and his motivations are interesting. And like I think the relationship he strikes up with Django in those mountain pass scenes we were talking about are really worthwhile. But the movie just rambles so much around that like you don't get that much out of Schultz as a character in the end. And then his scenes with DiCaprio feel like they should work better than they do. Like, I was really rooting for those scenes to come alive in a way. And, like, they did partly, but then there was always something that was missing from that, kind of in the movie as a whole, really.
Well, it kind of felt to me like in all those mountain pass sort of travel scenes that, like, Jamie Foxx is reduced to such impassivity while Christoph Waltz sort of holds forth in many of them. And then they get to Candyland, and both of them seem kind of dramatically cowed, not necessarily in their performances, but, like, they're... You know, the center so shifts to DiCaprio and Jackson and what each of them is noticing or not noticing that those two guys are sitting at a table for a long time.
Forever. And it's like you barely even, like, Fox is there in every shot, but, like, he doesn't do anything for a good 25 minutes during that endless dinner scene. It's death, that whole thing.
Which is sort of why I liked the third of the movie, which is when I've heard a lot of people really didn't sort of checked out. Like, I liked Jamie Foxx in that.
The part after the first ending?
Yeah.
You're in the sequel.
Yeah.
Django Unchained again.
Between, or whatever.
Django Returns.
Yeah. It may be a digression to talk about this, but God, Tarantino's appearance in the end of this movie just made me crazy.
Yeah. Well, it's like, so self-consciously, like, I think he's one of those... Remember how Meryl got up and accepted her Oscar and was just like, she could hear half the country being like, oh, her again.
Yeah.
I feel like Tarantino knew that as soon as he was going to show up on screen that, like, everybody's eyes would roll. But that somehow, like, we find him, like, charmingly terrible when he shows up in his movies. And it's just
or that's
not
what he's hoping. Yeah.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And it's just, like, not the case.
You're like, no, not charmingly terrible, just terribly terrible.
Yes. Just please let this movie end already.
I didn't think he was terrible.
Oh, no.
Yeah, what was terrible about that?
I couldn't even tell what accent he was going for. I mean, that's just for starters.
I've had to inform a lot of people that he was trying to be Australian because I think a lot of people didn't really get it, which I find hilarious.
Well, it sounded like it was supposed to be Southern at first, but, like, it doesn't make any sense for there to be a bunch of Australians wandering around the Deep South, so I think it took a minute to realize that.
I think it's a nod to all those Australian exploitation westerns that kind of took off from the Spaghettis in their own way. Because I think the other two guys are kind of famous from being in those. And one of them's the Wolf Creek guy.
Really curious how the movie will fare with Oscar. And, you know, I had asked you guys before, too, we were each going to share, you know, one... We're not going to go through predictions for each category, but one prediction we have... you know, overall or specifically. And one thing I'm sort of debating about saying, because I don't want to be wrong and be really embarrassed, but I kind of think it's not going to do well in nominations.
Django?
Well, the short timetable doesn't help it.
Well, and also I just feel like it's one of these movies that is made for online fervor. And online fervor is not the same as the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Well, it's also, isn't it a hit? Like, hasn't it made a good amount of money?
Yes.
So, I mean, doesn't that argue in its favor for nomination?
Well, sure. It's just that he strikes me as filmmakers go, and far more of an online god than an Oscar god.
I do think it helped Bastards a lot to come out in August and let people sit with it. And I think this could be, I mean, maybe if what you're prognosticating is a Talented Mr. Ripley situation where it is a hit, it is kind of halfway between prestige and kind of not Oscar material. Yeah, exactly. And that, like, that roped down like a ton of Globe nominations, but the Academy just didn't get to it, and it didn't look like something they were super eager to watch. And I could see something like that happening with this.
Yeah.
Do you think they get any of the supporting actor nominations?
I'm so sad right now thinking about that category, because it seems there's so many interesting and or great contenders that are all fighting for the same spot that's left by people that I'm just not jazzed about.
Which is always the story with that damn category.
And it seemed for a long time like it might really shake up this year, but...
Yeah, it's really solidified around
like
those four guys.
All the opportunity for it to shake up would have happened in the last week or two, and there's just been nothing for this thing to happen. And it's almost like Waltz and DiCaprio could be competing against each other to the point that neither of them gets it.
That's my feeling.
Right. With Sam Jackson and Eddie Redmayne and Matthew McConaughey and Javier Bardem. Like, give that group of six people one nomination. Like, okay.
So Django is my tentative, like, brave prediction that it's not going to do that well, because a lot of people think it's just going to have tons and tons of nominations.
Yeah.
How about any of you, any last minute feelings? This is what I'm thinking might happen.
Mine was Eddie Redmayne.
That you think it might happen?
That I think I think he might get in.
And why is that?
Because even though I am loath to even go near this movie in this conversation, I do think that that's an incredibly easy character to feel sympathetic for, and a performance to feel good about in a movie that's really hitting right now and skews kind of young, but in a movie I imagine will skew kind of old.
Okay.
And just given where he is in his career right now and how foregrounded he seems to have been in the movie's PR push, I think he'll have a good shot.
That'd be interesting.
That was
certainly
very diplomatic and unenthusiastically stated, Nick.
I thought way more bold until I saw that you, Nathaniel, also all currently have it predicted. But I think either Michael Haneke or Paul Thomas Anderson is going to get a Best Director nomination without a Best Picture nomination.
Ooh.
You know, everybody
Paul Thomas
thought
Anderson,
that alone.
Really?
I think it's possible that The Master could get a rebound, and I don't know why I keep thinking that. I think probably Haneke more likely than Paul Thomas Anderson, but I think it certainly will be interesting to see. Once the Best Picture expanded beyond five and everybody sort of figured that the days of the lone director were done.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year seems to be shaping up kind of perfectly for something like that.
I'd see Haneke as well. And I wonder about, if Riva then becomes the one to surprise an actress as well, that'd be an interesting show of strength on two fronts for more. But it does seem unlikely for it to get a Best Picture nomination for some reason.
Well, and it's funny
It didn't seem so a month ago, but then this month has been just very, very tilted toward the big Goliaths, you know, the big A-list Hollywood directors, you know.
Yeah. Well, and Riva, if she gets nominated, it'll be interesting because Chastain and Lawrence are running so neck and neck that those races always make the third place runner a contender. She would seem to be the beneficiary of that if she can get nominated.
I think that could also be true of Naomi Watts, though.
Yeah, I think that could be true.
Or even Loretta Young. She might wind up winning.
It's Loretta Young centennial in just like a week, guys.
Well, see, there you go.
She's the
dark horse no one's talking about.
You guys, I gave my mother... I want to talk about Christmas briefly. Okay. I gave my mother, this wasn't for Christmas, but I'm going to pretend it was for the sake of the conversation. I gave my mother
this is for her 31st birthday. But...
No, it was actually for my mother, for my mother's birthday, but which was a couple months ago. But I gave her a Loretta Young biography, and my mom was actually so excited about it, and she just keeps talking about it every time I talk to her.
I'm gonna emerge as being too dumb for this conversation. Who did she beat that she's so notorious?
Rosalind Russell and Joan Crawford and Dorothy McGuire. She had come in fourth in that poll they used to publish the morning of the awards that said, we've talked to a bunch of voters and this is where things have come out. And she was fourth, and then she won that night.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay.
For the farmer's daughter.
Little tidbit for all y'all.
Which I'm trying to remember which Rosalind Russell that was, I blame.
It was Morning Becomes Electro.
Oh, right. Okay. So anyway, my mom is a big Loretta Young fan, and
check that off on your bingo card.
And she, anyway, so I want to talk about Christmas gifts because I got a really awesome movie-related Christmas gift, but I want to hear what your guys' favorites were.
I didn't get any movie-related Christmas.
Yeah, I didn't either. I haven't.
What? Oh, okay.
I want to hear about yours.
Yeah.
Well, I got my best friend bought me. I don't know where he found it. A Best Actresses of the 90s, a paper doll book.
What?
Best Actresses of the 90s. And it doesn't have their names on it or anything. And, like, the actress is to, like, when you open up each page, the actress is to the left. And on the other page is the Oscar dresses to the right. Because you have to, like, cut them out and put them together, right?
Like all the ones that she has worn.
Right, and then, like, I swear to God, since the name isn't on the page, every single time I turned a page, I would like, my friends were totally laughing at me. I would just name the actress by just looking at the dress. Every page.
Now, was this your best friend before you got this gift, or after?
First of all, I can't believe that exists.
I know.
Second of all, that is absolutely in the same mail order catalog as the My Dinner with Andre action figures. Like, that's amazing that exists, but that's exactly that same line, the remains of the day lunchbox and my 90s actresses paper dolls. Like, I love it.
Remains of the day lunchbox. I always forget about that.
You were excited to talk about this. You have the best movie Christmas present of all time. Of course,
I was like, "What?" I practically screamed because I didn't know it existed, and it was hilarious. And I knew every single dress.
That's amazing.
Let's think about the girls in Last Train Home that are making that and going, "Who the fuck? What is wrong with that whole girl?"
Why do I have to copy this Mercedes Rule act?
In the dark. It's a little globalization humor for everybody.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to go and rewatch that Mercedes Rule Oscar clip. By the way, I've been sort of drowning in Oscar acceptance speeches lately. I've been watching all the YouTube videos. And Mercedes Rules is the strangest one I've seen. Where it just seems like nobody in the room likes her. And she's going through this really kind of rambly and smug intro to her speech that ends with her talking about, well, this is another one for my memoirs or something like that. And it's like, I don't know, like, that she expected everybody to sort of, like, understand her great grand actor's journey. And it's just like, but you're Mercedes Rule. Like, what are you talking about?
Well, she just won the Tony, like, won the Tony, like, 6 months before, right? So I think
it was one of those years. Yeah.
Yeah. You all love me. Yeah. But... I mean, she didn't even wear cornrows. She didn't do anything. But
she didn't wear cornrows. She did not. Oh, my gosh.
That was the year, if I can just say, we're doing great at our agenda. But I lived in Germany for a few years growing up, and we got the Oscars a day after they happened. And my brother, who is older, would force me to do all of his chores and occasionally even more embarrassing things than that, or else he would threaten to tell me who had won because it was in the newspaper.
Diabolical. That,
I asked my mom if she would write me a note to not have to go to school, and she was like, I can't write. Please excuse Nicholas from his classes. He does not want to know who won the Oscar. But I thought that friends would think of this as a topic that I would enjoy, and I was going to have to run away from them. Oh, so I did something to piss him off. I think
this
I
is like my favorite story ever on the podcast.
Okay. So I think I stopped him from watching a baseball game that night that was being broadcast live at like 2 a.m. because he came downstairs and I was watching The Unbearable Lightness of Being, which just distills our sibling relationship right there. And so he stormed out of the room screaming, "Mercedes Rule beat Juliette Lewis, just so you know." And I began to cry. So there you go.
Oh my God, that's the saddest thing. Oh.
Oh.
Juliet.
My heart was so torn that year because I loved both of them.
Yeah. My
Your
heart was apparently
so
well. Strained. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. It was pretty bad. I didn't speak to him for like 8 years after that.
Justifiably so.
I don't even know where he's living right now.
So did anybody besides me get a movie Christmas gift?
I don't think so.
I got a nice gift certificate to our local theater that we know and enjoy.
Well, that works.
But you know, it didn't come with a dress.
Speaking of, I can't believe I let Last Train Home references go without saying a word. And that movie is so great, and nobody talks about it.
Yeah.
So, rental suggestion, Nick's globalization joke.
Right.
Last Train Home is amazing. And it didn't get Oscar nominations or anything.
Pair it with WE.
This is a list of things that I love. I am the girl of 100 lists. From what shall I wear to who I have kissed? Check right and thought that nothing be missing. I to myself in my 100 list.
Top 10 lists, it's that time of year.
Yeah, it is.
And I know most of us, I think, Katie, you've...
I've published mine, yeah. I didn't realize it was so far ahead of the curve. I feel like I was the last one.
Yeah,
she might
no, you're never the last one.
Beyond publishing, Katie has also had... When you're done with this podcast, go listen to the top 10 version of the Op Kino podcast she does, because I just did that yesterday, and they had this amazing hour-and-a-half conversation about all their top 10s, which were super interesting.
I am so delighted that you listened. Thank you.
But since most of us are not finished, all of us other than Katie, I was thinking we could just give a sneak peek, and I just picked a random number, 6. What is, on the current draft of your top 10 list?
I guess since I have mine out, mine's Amore is the number 6 on my list, and as I said in our email, I saw it in August and I haven't revisited it since, and so it was kind of a hard thing to feel certain about, given that I've been able to, you know, rewatch everything more recently. But I don't know, Amore's pretty great. We've all seen it, right?
Yes.
I actually just saw it yesterday, and so it's been sort of bouncing around the top 6 on my list just since seeing it yesterday. I've sort of placed it a few places. It was at 6 for a while. Now I've got it a little bit ahead, so now I have Middle of Nowhere at my 6, mm-hmm. which I kind of expect to maybe go back up into the top 5, I'm not sure. I really, really, really loved that movie, and was kind of not entirely sure what to expect.
Mm-hmm. Amore or Middle of Nowhere? Sorry.
Middle of Nowhere, sorry, this is Middle of Nowhere. And it was just really, not only just like gorgeously acted and really kind of telling a story that didn't hit the normal big dramatic beats that you would expect it to hit, mm-hmm. but it also just looks incredibly gorgeous in this sort of, without these big kind of cinematography flourishes that you would expect, or mm-hmm. like any kind of easy, like, you know, scenery or anything like that. It's just like it makes these interior locations look moody and just not self-conscious about it. And there's a scene that takes place in a club,
mm-hmm.
that looks so incredibly gorgeous. And like, I know no place on earth has ever looked that kind of simultaneously sexy and also surreptitious, and but not dark and dank. It was sort of just lit really, really gorgeously.
Mm-hmm.
I expect I'll probably watch that movie a couple more times. It's so, so, so good.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of that movie as well, and I can't believe I almost didn't like register its existence. So this is what awards can be good for, advocacy.
Yeah.
And I'm really, really glad that the Gotham Awards embraced it, because it was suddenly like, I don't know how it had slipped my radar, but I thought it was terrific.
Yeah.
And I thought the arcs in that movie were really interesting for being so different than arcs in most movies.
Yep.
Yeah.
And especially the lead character's, you know, sort of her journey, which was about trying not to have a journey initially, which I thought was really fascinating. So anyway, yeah, that's also on my top 10 list as well.
David Oyelowo, guys, he's taking over the world.
He is.
He's totally taking over the world. And you don't, well, you're not quite sure where he is at the end of the movie. We'll just say that.
Yeah.
And not in a, that's not a criticism. We're saying it in a good way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think that, I mean, the actors are all so strong in that movie, and that's where a lot of the, and I guess people feel like her screenplay has attracted quite a bit of attention too, but I'm totally with Joe that from the technical standpoint too, it's just so well done, and like the same cinematographer lit Pariah.
It's
unbelievable club scene that feels totally different from this one, but and it must be said, like, has any movie you've seen in like the last 3 or 4 years where black people are allowed to have the different complexions from each other that they probably have in real life,
right?
And lighting for different skin tones and is something that almost no cinematographers seem to take any trouble to do. This happens in Django all the time, where Jamie Foxx is not being well served by a lighting scheme that's flattering a lot of other people. And everybody in Middle of Nowhere looks amazing. And so Bradford Young, man, he's great.
Bradford Young.
And like, yeah, Emmy Yahtzee Coronaldi, I mean, how many different ways does he light her? And she's just transfixing. Like,
she's astounding. She's really, really, really good.
Yes.
And say her name one more time because
I don't know how to pronounce it either.
Emmy Yahtzee Coronaldi.
Right.
I'm
and it
so
does
impressed.
Our favorite thing of, like, you know, hitting it big when she's not 19 or 21 and a little dress, you know, like, super happy for her.
I hope she's getting roles. I haven't looked into seeing, like, if people have been breaking down her door to cast her.
Yeah, I'm just worried about the fact that I was still hoping for something to happen with Adepero Odeu. From Pariah, and then this happened, and I'm like, how many breakthroughs can we have with no follow-ups?
Well, she's in 12 Years a Slave.
She's in 12 Years a Slave, which I'm hoping is a decent-sized role for her. There's a billion people in that, so I can I can never tell who's gonna get a featured part in that. Mm-hmm.
And she was in that Steel Magnolias on TV, which I think was kind of a get. I mean, that was a good
cast. That's true.
And I think she's actually got some other stuff lined up, too.
Okay. I shouldn't be a pessimist, but I'm
more depressed about Viola Davis's outlook because she seems to have really. You would have thought after last year that people would just be throwing these amazing roles at her, and there just doesn't seem to be anything huge on her horizon quite yet, and it's a bummer.
She's in Ender's Game.
Yeah, but I mean that's true. I just feel like that's not going to be. I want her to win an award. That'll be great for her career, that's true, but I want her to win an award.
Well, when she was in Chicago, she was really stressing how much she's putting into the projects she's developing through her production company.
Well, that's
trying
good.
To insist on getting money for those, which include, apparently, her in a romantic comedy headlining it.
Wow.
And
that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because she's actually so pretty, and the filmmakers pretend she's not.
And funny, and all those things, yeah. And a biopic of Barbara Jordan.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, a black lesbian Democrat who was against immigration in Texas and was disabled by the end of her life. So if you want that award, here you go.
Coming right up.
But she's not going to be easy for anybody to like just automatically get behind politically. So that will be exciting to talk about.
Yeah. Are we doing our number sixes in the acting categories as well, or was that just Best Picture?
No, it was just Best Picture. So we've got Joe's, which
I overprepared.
Joe's, which is Middle of Nowhere. Katie's, which is Amour. Mine is Farewell, My Queen.
Ooh.
Nice.
My God,
still
I've never
have
seen
to see
that
movie.
Which I just found so bracing for something so minimal. You know, people think, oh, costume drama, but it's just so not what you're expecting with that. So
yeah,
I highly recommend that for people.
I'm anticipating that coming on DVD because I missed it while it was in theaters, shamefully.
I just felt it was like one of the most contemporary feeling period pieces without being anachronistic that I've seen.
Yeah.
Totally agree with you. Diane Kruger, so amazing.
Yes.
I can't decide on mine, but it's because there's some movies that sort of remind me of each other, and mm-hmm. on a syllabus I would put them together. So it's Magic Mike and Miss Bala and this movie called Starlet that's sort of kind of out right now.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in seeing Starlet.
Yeah.
I missed a screening of that, and I'm so mad at myself once I saw your rating, Nick.
It's so good, and in some ways to explain what it has to do with the other ones means giving stuff away that I don't want to, but I
well,
like
I just,
all...
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, because I just want to know how Magic Mike and
Miss Bala?
Miss Bala well, possibly yeah. relate.
Like, the way in which, like, these characters who all are, in all three cases, not only are quite beautiful, but know what they think they can get out of the world from looking the way they do and even sort of presenting it, and then immediately get caught up in way bigger forces where, like, they wind up seeming, like, incredibly at the behest of all these other people and big structures they don't even know anything about. And I think Channing Tatum's character is so interesting for how he's actually trying to control those forces, and, like, we think he thinks of himself as being really prepared to mm-hmm. you know, kind of be the master of his own ship, but he's so not. And, like, those final close-ups at the end when he's deciding, do I stay or do I go, just reminded me so much of what Miss Bala looks like repeatedly in her movie, of just, like, the frozen beauty object making up their mind about something. Mm-hmm.
That's totally... Now I want to see them back to back. It's fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, stylistically, they have zero to do with each other, and, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But and then Starlet, for reasons I won't get into, but just try to see the movie or remember that it existed a year from now when we all have the bad habit of only watching brand new things. You don't know why the girl in that would be sort of participating in this conversation until about an hour in. And it looks like one of these, like, young person, old person kind of cute friendship movies. And mm-hmm. it's got a lot else on its mind than that. But I just like what they all three do with the question of, what do you do in the world when you look a certain way?
Interesting.
That was such an interesting theme to ring between movies, because those kinds of movies feel kind of rare.
Yeah.
Like movies accept beauty as being power most of the time, as opposed to actually questioning it.
Now, and I remember that was my favorite thread in Little Children, actually, was how they really sort of head-on discussed how Patrick Wilson's good looks sort of served him so well throughout his life and sort of have affected the way other people have treated him.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He would have been an amazing Magic Mike 10 years ago. He would have been casting for that.
Yeah.
But I think it's also, like, when you start paying attention to how beautiful people are, it can be a real excuse to... I don't know. Those three stories are so specifically immersed in where they're happening.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And in a really, really both kind of, like, historically wise and geographically wise. And that's pretty rare for a movie that's about somebody being hot.
Yeah.
Which usually just abstracts all that stuff.
And, right.
So they're duking it out at the, like, sort of 5, 6, 7, 8. They're all in there.
So that's all of our number sixes. So stay tuned for those top 10 lists, but check Katie's out now on Cinema Blend.
Yeah, it's there.
And on the App Geno podcast. We keep going well over, you know, 45 minutes, which is the longest I can make the podcast for upload purposes.
Yes.
I think we need to start we need to start coming up with an idea for intermissions.
Accordions.
Accordions.